set up shop and set up a business, because it's a very lucrative business. So those who have been blocked from a pathway into a job or into a business mm-hmm. because of marijuana charges, that barrier needs to be removed. And we need to not only remove the barrier, but we need to have some incentives and some help and some support for them to be able to establish their businesses and issue the licenses in that priority, say it, you know, and what my bill actually requires that. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we move into a Democratic majority in the House where, you know, there's a new power center, what lessons can be learned from California and from the Bay Area mm-hmm. in terms of approaching this issue?
I think a lot of lessons can be learned because we've struggled with this for many years. In my own city, for example, we have an office that really reviews the applications for licenses and tries to prioritize those living in the zip codes where the marijuana charges were the highest, or those who have been charged with marijuana offenses are given priority. And there are a lot of difficulties, a lot of issues that have to be unpacked. But I think if any place that it can be done right, it's in California, and then, of course, in my district. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's important, and going back to my Marijuana Justice Act, that we, first of all, allow, and we're doing that in many areas in California, those who have been charged with misdemeanors, that their records be expunged mm-hmm. automatically.
Once again, that was U.S. Congresswoman Barbara Lee, courtesy of the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm Dean at DrugTruth.net.
As an effect of the implementation of a new Trump immigration policy, 55-year-old Carlos Gomez Perdomo of Honduras was sent back to Mexico to await the results of his asylum hearing, which could take over a year. Since many asylum seekers are fleeing violence in their home countries, returning them to await an asylum hearing could be placing them in danger. Nicole Ramos, an attorney with the Tijuana-based legal aid office Al Otro Lado, had this to say. We have worked with people who are under active threat here in Mexico, who have had to move between shelters and stay in secret locations because they are being actively pursued, end quote. Mexican officials have sent mixed signals on whether Mexico would impose limits on accepting families returned from the U.S., since many of them are not Mexican citizens. And now it's time for the Green News Report.
It's Tuesday, January 29, 2019.
We're all going to be feeling it. It's that dreaded polar vortex.
Bracing for an Arctic blast across America. And yes, it is linked to global warming. Hundreds dead after mining waste dam collapse in Brazil. Trump's government shutdown is over for now, but some damage is irreversible. Plus,
we're talking about trying to put together a Green New Deal. Anybody in favor of that?
I support a Green New Deal.
2020 Democratic presidential candidates are pushing for action on climate change.
All of that action and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Wind chill alerts right now. 20 to 60 below for at least 20 million people stretching from the Dakotas all the way into Pennsylvania.
Yay, global warming is over. Just trying to save Fox News the trouble. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, ridonkulously cold temperatures across the U.S. this week. You know Fox News is going to be on it.
Oh, you know they will be.
What global warming? Where's Al Gore now? That's what they do.
Yes, it is. But first, want to go down to Brazil, where hundreds of people are still missing in the southeastern part of the country after a dam holding back toxic mine tailings waste burst on Saturday, triggering a deadly mudslide that inundated a nearby village, killing at least 65 people as of airtime. The same mining company was also at fault in another deadly mine dam disaster 4 years ago that destroyed a different Brazilian town. The risk of such dam collapses is the reason why, up in Alaska, a majority of residents oppose the massive proposed pebble mine in the Bristol Bay watershed.
Well, those dams only collapse in other countries, not here in the great U.S. of A.
Here in the great U.S. of A, the Midwest and the East Coast are bracing for a dangerous blast of Arctic air called the polar vortex, caused when the polar jet stream spills out of the Arctic like a freezer door left open. The National Weather Service warned that the intensity of the extreme cold is, quote, life-threatening, with temperatures 30 to 40 degrees below normal. Mm. And yes, if it seems like these polar freezes are happening more often, you're right. They are. A growing body of climate research links these more frequent polar vortex breakdowns to man-made global warming, which is altering the jet stream and weather patterns.
So warming is caused by global warming, and cold is caused by global warming.
Extremes are caused by climate change.
Well said.
The longest ever federal government shutdown is over, for now, and may cost the U.S. economy as much as $11 billion in lost economic activity, according to the Congressional Budget Office on Monday. But it also led to tangible, irreversible damage. Some scientists were forced to abandon research and data gathering because the National Science Foundation could not make timely research grants. Fire crews missed their window for training and conducting controlled burns to prevent wildfires. The Trump administration's decision to leave national parks open and unstaffed resulted in visitors damaging park assets. New assessments this week show some of the impacts are irreversible and will not be restored. In the Florida Everglades, herons and other birds were poached by thieves. Mm. In the West, ancient rock carvings were defaced, and off-roaders destroyed fragile desert soils and ancient trees, which ecology experts say will take literally centuries to recover. Mm. And Trump is threatening to shut it all down all over again on February 15th.
He's got a lot more damage to do.
But there is some good news. The 2020 presidential campaign is underway.
That's good news?
Well, whether you like it or not, it's underway. And the Democratic candidates, for the first time, are putting climate change front and center in their campaigns. California's Democratic Senator Kamala Harris, in a CNN town hall in Iowa on Monday, endorsed the as-yet-undefined Green New Deal to combat climate change.
I support a Green New Deal, and I will tell you why. Climate change is an existential threat to us, and we have got to deal with the reality of it.
And in a speech at Columbia College in New Jersey over the weekend, Democratic presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts called climate action a moral and economic imperative and proposed specific policy goals for a potential Green New Deal.
We stop subsidizing oil companies. And how about we make real investments not only in green energy, but in the infrastructure we need to develop the real resilience to the changes that are coming our way, right?
The question now is, will the corporate media let Democrats' climate policy interrupt their horse race coverage?
Nothing interrupts that. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, and there were many, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. Here are the main points again. Local activist Teresa Rayford lawsuit was dismissed. Polar vortex spreads across the Midwestern U.S. And in international news, the situation in Venezuela continues to escalate. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Emily Gresham-Beamer, Alex Riedlinger, Dan Raphael, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is David Coisters. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philanoweth on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with Joanne Hardesty. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather welcomes evangelical academic activist Chris Strew. They will be discussing the Twitter hashtag Expose Christian Schools and the evangelical backlash to the Church 2 movement. At 11, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a KBOO member, we are currently in a matching period for new members. You can find out more by going to kboo.fm/support to get your donation match today. That's it for Wednesday. Good night, Emily.
Good night, Erin.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO, with news from your community radio station.
Good evening, good afternoon, KBOO listeners. This is News from the Boo. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw, bringing you news from in and around the KBOO community. And tonight we've got a special guest by the name of Jupiter, a high school student, music writer, producer, creator, and a hip-hop artist. Jupiter, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good, Mike. How about you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for coming down and hanging out with us at KBOO.
Yeah, for sure.
You ever been to KBOO before?
I don't think so.
Okay. So how long have you been producing music?
About a year and a half, maybe more.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get started?
My brother started using Ableton, the program I use, when he was about my age, but my family's always been super musical, so they kind of pushed me to do it.
Okay, so how many, your brother, is he a live musician as well, electronic production?
No, he just makes music through Ableton.
And do other people in your family play instruments?
Yeah, everyone in my family plays an instrument. My mom plays keyboard and she sings and she plays guitar, and my dad plays guitar, keyboard, and sings, and he drums.
Wow.
And my sister plays guitar, piano, and she sings too.
My wife sings, my daughter's and plays saxophone, keyboard, guitar, and my daughter is playing trumpet. She's learning trumpet now and she sings. My wife and I perform and record together often. But we haven't done anything as a family. Does your family ever all play together?
Yeah, sometimes we have jam sessions, but like we never plan them. They're just like kind of spur of the moment type things.
That's dope, man. So you started producing a year and a half ago, inspired by your brother, and you play live instruments too, right?
Yeah.
What do you play?
I play drums, and I also play snare for a drum line, or I used to, but I played snare for 2 years.
So for those of you that know me well, you know that I love marching band, snare, and the cadences. I think it's one of the craziest styles, and it's, to me, it adds so nicely. It can be so dope to add into electronic music production, especially for EDM, drum and bass, hip hop. Like, so I'm always talking to producers and I'm like, can we put a live drum fill in there, like, and making the sounds with my mouth and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you incorporate some of what you learned in playing in the marching band and playing drums into your electronic production?
Yeah, I feel like I have a good sense of rhythm, so I could play along with my beats on keyboard and with drums.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I feel like I have unique drum patterns just because I like have an understanding of how drums work.
Right. And do you rap too? Are you a vocalist as well as producer?
Yeah, I write raps. It's more like poetry for me because I never really vocalize it.
Uh-huh.
But I'd like to someday. I just got to work on my rapper's voice.
Rapper voice. Took me a long time to like the way my voice sounded on a mic. Yeah, I can relate, man. So who are some of your favorite artists?
This guy I work with, Daniel. He's kind of my favorite artist right now. I've been listening to his album a lot, and I have a song on it, so it's kind of nice to hear my production on an album that's like well known.
Yeah, we're going to listen to a song that you did, a collaboration that you produced for Daniel in a few minutes here. And what do you want people to know about your style of music production, you know?
I guess just I can really do any type of style. Like sometimes I hear a song by a rapper and I'm like, I want to make a song for this rapper. So I try it and it's pretty much always perfect.
And where do you see yourself? You've been doing music a year and a half.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Famous, honestly.
Famous, huh? You say famous, what does that mean to you? Describe it in a way that people can feel.
I guess just working with mainstream artists and living lavish.
Living lavish. So what are some things you want to have when you're lavishly living?
I talked with my mom about it a couple days ago, and I'd really like to have like a 7-Eleven in my house just so I could have snacks all the time.
That's funny. I used to joke that I wanted a pink fur helicopter with a banging system, and that I could just fly around the city in my helicopter listening to my it'd be like like floor to ceiling speakers in my helicopter.
Yeah,
if I wanted to, I could like, you know, turn it up so everybody could hear it. But you know, jokes. But just think, it's good to have dreams, man. And do you know about the path that you would take to achieve the success that you dream of?
I guess just networking. Like, I do all my own networking. I'm, like, unmanaged. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of easy for me because I've learned all this time I've been producing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to, like, hit up artists that I want to work with. And if they say no, like, I'm fine with it. I'll just hit up someone else. But, yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing lately.
I'm gonna go a little bit deeper, Jupiter. Is that your birth name?
Yeah.
Okay. What is it? Like, what are the reasons you do music? What are the reasons that art and creativity is important to you?
Well, I've dealt with depression for a lot of my life, and more recently in my life. So music, getting better at music is really helpful for me. Because I could just like transfer my emotions into a song, and you could really tell by the beats I make.
Okay. This song that we're going to listen to, first of all, where can people find your music online if they want to check you out after this show is over?
On SoundCloud, look up OTWL Jupiter, stands for Out of This World Like Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And same with YouTube, Out of This World Like Jupiter.
That's what's up, man. And then you work with this local artist, Daniel, but he's doing big things. You said he's blowing up.
Yeah.
So where do you know where people can find Daniel, or how does he spell his name?
Well, you could find him on Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And he spells his name Daniel, and it's pronounced Daniel.
Okay. I just want to remind people, you're listening to News from the Boo. I'm Mike Crenshaw, and in my work as a teaching artist and cultural activist, I mentor and work with young people. And Jupiter is a high school student at Alliance at Benson. And I'm working over there doing project-based learning and trying to work with kids on hip-hop, work with students on hip-hop projects that can earn them credit towards graduating. So this song, what's the song that what's the name of the song we're about to listen to, and what's it about?
The song's called Letter to You, and The way I interpreted it was Daniel writing a letter to someone who he loved and was his girlfriend, I'm pretty sure, and the song suggests that she had killed herself or at least tried to kill herself.
Okay. So suicide is something that impacts a lot of people's lives. I was recently part of a project that interviewed, called Ask the Question, a lot of people, 14 people throughout Clackamas County metro area, and we talked about their surviving suicide, and we talked to their support people. And that was a really impactful thing for me, and just recognizing how profoundly people are affected by early childhood trauma, and how that leads a lot of people to think that their life is not worth living. How is, would you mind me asking if you, are there ways in which suicide has impacted you personally?
Yeah, this past summer, my friend and kind of mentor, I looked up to him a lot. He was 19 and he killed himself. His name was Isaiah. And he was a big part of my community because I skateboard as well, and he was a local at the skate park that I'm also a local at.
Okay.
And he also was my sister's ex, so yeah. Like he was really involved in my life, and it impacted me a lot. It like really set me off.
Yeah. Condolences. I lost my first friend, good friend, to suicide when I was about 18 years old. Megan Cook, rest in power, and rest in power to your comrade who fell. And what skate park are you local?
Glen Haven Skate Park.
Okay. Shout out to the Glen Haven locals. And thanks for coming down, Jupiter, man. I'm looking forward to it. Once again, for the people, what's the name of this song and who is it?
Letter to You by Daniel.
All right, y'all. Thanks for listening to News from the Boo. I'll be coming on the air twice a month, Wednesdays between 5:30 and 6. And we're going to continue to feature young people that are doing good work throughout the city. A lot of young activists and artists and students and so on and so forth. So take care of yourselves and we'll talk soon. Peace.
Peace.
Yeah. Dear. Hello. Write you a letter, and I just hope that you get it. Even though you brought me pain, you were the reason I'm living. Blood dripping from your body, your motion controls your decision. I'm hoping you feel it the way that I'm feeling, for real. You never felt like enough until you felt my touch, holding you until death. I never felt so in love. It always feels like forever until the moment it ends. You are my friend. I just hope that I'ma see you again. They said you dead. They say you couldn't handle being on earth. I relate, they say I'm blessed, but I feel like I'm cursed. Wrote this verse with a feeling in my chest I can't explain. I feel stuck, staring at the walls, drowning in the pain. What the fuck? I'm sorry for everything that I said. I'm sorry for hurting you, leaving you to lay in your bed. With nobody by your side, I had to swallow my pride and follow my heart and let you know you still in my mind. I don't blame you for the things that you did when you hurt. Yeah, we all make mistakes, and trust me, you're not the first. And we all fade away, cause nothing ever lasts forever. I don't know if you're still alive, but this is my letter.
Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. In the building with us, my man Juan One Way. That's right, Juan Amador. Yeah. He's no stranger to our airwaves. We also know Juan is a very popular DJ here in the Bay Area. He's also a good MC, a member of the group Alphabet Rockers. So the man that is sitting in front of us this afternoon is not only all that, but he's Grammy nominated. So we got a Grammy nominated individual sitting with us this afternoon on Hard Knock Radio. And true to form, this man is coming back. Not with a new album, not with another gig, but another play that he's a part of. Yep. It is called Candlestick, and I think this will resonate with a lot of people, especially when you consider what's going on in Candlestick. So let's talk about this play and why it's important.
Yeah, I mean, it basically centers around a group of friends that are, you know, kind of lifelong tailgaters at Candlestick Park. And this takes place in 2013, the last season of Candlestick. And, you know, it goes around those relationships of family, but obviously all the things that are going on at that time, how much they're all from the Bayview, how much the Bayview is changing, how the impending end of Candlestick is changing people's work, their jobs. The main character, Lyle, who's played by Donald Lacey, he's fighting an eviction with his landlord in the play. And, you know, it's very much the same situation that we're seeing all over the Bay, the same situation we're seeing with the Raiders fans right now at Oakland Coliseum, you know what I mean? So
this is a play that really, at its core, yeah, is about gentrification and the whole upheaval that we're seeing in the city.
It's a time capsule, and it's about loyalty to your city and to your space. And I think when you think of those things in these last 10, 20 years in the Bay Area, you have to talk about gentrification. You have to talk about displacement, especially amongst black and brown communities.
You know, sometimes when we are in certain circles here in the Bay, you know, some more progressive / radical circles, and we talk about sports, mm-hmm, you know, there's the inevitable, well, you know, I don't listen to sports, and, you know, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't watch football. I don't listen to baseball.
Yeah.
But what I found is that for many people, sports is a really integral part of the life. And you talked about this lifelong friendship around Candlestick.
Yeah.
It's a lot of tradition. Yeah. And I think for a lot of working class folks, mm-hmm, in particular,
yeah,
you know, the guy that works or the woman that works 9 to 5, and as you said, Sunday's your day off, and you're, mm-hmm, just going to go grab your beer, you're going to go with your friends, and you're going to watch that game while you're playing dominoes or barbecuing.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, Candlestick, in many ways, seemed to be an epicenter for so many San Franciscans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you had all walks of life. Just like you said, you had people from all the neighborhoods. You know, you had your more rich, wealthy folks, but you definitely had your blue collar workers. Like most of the cast, they're portraying folks who are electrical workers in the union. And then my character Hugo, he's a scalper. And you know, there's a part in this play where, you know, we're talking about selling parking spots, and you know, that's the economy. I know there's people in the Bayview who are probably happy that they don't get the traffic, but you think about just all the jobs that were involved in Candlestick, or just the work, the economy around it, around the city, how much that changed.
There was an ecosystem,
yeah,
legal and illegal.
Yeah.
There was the scalping system.
Mm-hmm.
There was the parking system.
Yeah.
There was all that stuff, you know, the T-shirt,
yeah,
system.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people ate because of that.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it hurt a lot. It hurt a lot. It did. You said it perfectly. It felt like it took the soul. It took a piece of the soul out of the city. And yeah.
So you have some people from the Bay, you know, a lot of people from the Bay. So talk about some of the people that's in there. You mentioned Tommy Shepard. You mentioned Donald Lacey. What do they bring to the game? And is this the first time really having those type of individuals who are very visible working with you in a play?
You know what, Campo Santo, this was a big family show for us. Everybody involved was pretty much longtime Campo Santo members.
What is Campo Santo?
Campo Santo is a theater company started in San Francisco in 1996, based around creating new work for writers of color, queer folks, young people, and been putting out groundbreaking work for the last, you know, 20 plus years. So,
what's it like, you know, being in the city with it being changed so much? Obviously, you're reaching out for people who would understand and get it, but now you're in the city where people aren't even fans of the local teams because so many, the majority of people coming from other places. What's that like now?
You know, it's a little sad. I feel like I've had to take a moratorium on discussing gentrification sometimes. It's like we got to take a couple days off because my heart hurts seeing it change, but that's why it's so important to have pieces like this, because it reminds us that we were here and we still are here and our people are here. Maybe, you know, we're getting kicked out and we're down to these small numbers, but black and brown folks exist in San Francisco and in the Bay Area, period. And we need to document our stories.
You know? Right. Definitely keep the stories alive so history doesn't get rewritten.
Exactly, exactly. So I highly encourage everyone to come out and support this. I think you're going to see a lot of yourselves in it. If you don't see yourselves, you're going to see your uncle, you're going to see your cousins, you'll feel it, trust me. And again, you know, I know people have their allegiances, though you don't have to be a 49er fan. You don't even have to be an NFL fan. This will resonate with you, trust.
There you have it, Juan Amador.
Yeah.
You got to say Juan Amador. When you say that's it, you right. got to hold your hand out and say it like that's Juan right. Amador, you know.
Shout out to my dude from Democracy Now, but you know.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. We continue our ongoing coverage of the U.S.-backed attempted coup